Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
My favorite podcast, because I help make it.
That narrows it down. What antiques are we talking about this week?
Well, we are going to get crazy. We're going to talk about souvenir spoons. Wow, you're more excited than I thought.
Fuck yes, souvenir spoons.
Oh, you like these?
They're the most useless bullshit I've ever goddamn seen. And I love it. Please.
You've cut to the core of them.
All about souvenir spoons.
So, all right. Right out the gate, there's some debate about how old souvenir spoons really are.
What?
Well, it seems like the most concrete example that everyone can agree is a type of souvenir spoon is from the early 1500s, and they were called apostle spoons.
Sorry, we have fucking Renaissance souvenir spoons?
We do, yeah. These are probably the inspiration for later souvenir spoons.
I love them already.
Yeah. They are, as the name suggests, spoons that have very intricate carvings on the handle of the 12 apostles and Jesus.
So you have to collect them all.
You've gotta catch them all. Gotta catch them all.
Apostles.
Holy men. Oh, okay. The Jesus spoon is vanishingly rare.
Does it kind of just disappear right after 3 days?
Yeah, does it become assumed into heaven?
Yeah.
Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes.
Maybe, well, like, the real problem, these are commissioned works, given that it's 1500s.
So is it kind of like an Audubon's Bird Book problem where not everyone can afford the full subscription?
Exactly. Most people are lucky to get one. Full sets basically don't exist, and these were largely like a print-on-demand kind of thing.
Alternative explanation, the Jesus spoon kept getting raptured.
That too, hey, we can't prove that that's not what happened. All we know is that there aren't a lot of Jesus spoons.
Draw your own conclusions.
You figure it out.
Checkmate.
Get back to us.
Checkmate atheists.
Yeah, checkmate atheists. If there's no Jesus spoons, then how could Jesus not be real? I guess I just gonna have to rethink that one. Lewis's quadrilemma. Mad, bad, God, or spoon?
God, I love blasphemy freaks.
Oh, God.
So spoons.
So I just wanted to add in that they were christening gifts, usually. This kind of goes back to the, like, born with a silver spoon in the mouth thing.
Yeah. It's literal.
I find it very funny in a dark way that they were one of the least affordable things on this planet, and they were depictions of Jesus and his crew, men dedicated to living in poverty. So, like, that's funny to
Listen,
me.
A rich man will pass through the handle of a spoon.
Yeah.
Wait. Hang on.
No, even, like, he's still not gonna do that. And that's something that's a more generous offer. Sorry. Oh, blasphemy. Moving on to the mid-1800s, we have middle class rising, which I have written out like Metal Gear Revengeance.
Yeah, middle class rising.
With the advent of, and possibly the first example of, like, leisure travel. Things were pretty hard scrabble before this, and leisure travel was pretty much restricted to the rich and the elite. Around the mid-1800s, now it's just sort of rich and kind of elite.
Trains.
Yeah, like, everything's kind of coming up travel.
Everything's coming up trains!
And so, and this is where things are murky because nobody knows why spoons specifically, there were, in areas, spoons marked with the name of the city that you were visiting. And sometimes, like, a little decoration.
No one knows why spoons!
That's, like, here, I did a lot to try to everyone was talking a big game about, like, the rising of the middle class and the industrialization of industry, but nobody was getting to the heart of, like, hey, why spoons? because I have a hard enough time understanding why the apostle spoons were spoons.
D, consider, there is no spoon.
Oh, that's, the Matrix! Oh, that's the Matrix one!
Welcome to 2002, everybody.
Neo, is that you? God, I wish you were half as charming as Keanu Reeves.
Wow.
What?
Wait, did you say you?
I wish I was half as charming. For all you know, you are as charming. You are.
I know I'm not, but thank you.
So, yeah, I don't know why spoons, but spoons. I guess possibly because they were, like, a simple object that, like, technically had a use.
I guess?
Maybe.
But, like, I feel like a souvenir button hook would be more immediately useful and versatile.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Nail file.
So we move on to 1851. 51. Yeah, 1851. With the famed Crystal Palace exhibition.
Yes!
This featured a souvenir spoon of the Crystal Palace exhibition. And everybody loved it.
The Crystal Palace was basically a giant greenhouse in the middle of London because we finally figured out how to make glass work.
Yeah, the Crystal Palace was maybe calling it the kickoff to, like, what I'm going to tentatively call, like, the exhibition era. Like, you'd know more about this than me, but, like, I feel like the Crystal Palace is when everyone was like, exhibitions are dope, and I love them.
Yes. It was also became a place to display all the cool new technological achievements of the 19th century.
And spoons!
And also the fascinating new spoon technologies of the 19th century.
Well, not everyone could afford to electrify their homes, but everyone could buy a small spoon.
Tesla's over here running alternating current through his body to prove it's safe. And meanwhile, someone in the corner is like, but spoon.
Yeah, I'm watching this and I'm just like, where are the spoons?
Tesla, do you have an electric spoon?
Oh, dope, dope. Oh my god, you remember those lightsaber spoons they gave away in cereals?
No, I loved those. But I remember the Trix color-changing spoons.
Those were good too. So this, like, souvenir spoons became a thing. They weren't crazy popular, but they were, like, a thing, and other places in Europe were like, ah, we should do that. Now let's enter 1889.
I do love me some 1889.
This is the first American souvenir spoon.
What?
A well-traveled silversmith, who had been to the Crystal Palace exhibition, Galt and Brothers of Washington, D.C., they made a souvenir spoon in the profile of George Washington for his 100th anniversary of being president and dead. At the same time. No, actually, that anniversary came later. Just being president.
One, that's great. Two, why the fuck wasn't Paul Revere on the souvenir spoon shit?
It's a great question. He loved useless shit.
I'm just really mad that it took so long for Americans to get on board with souvenir spoons.
It took us a while, but you're gonna like where it goes.
Am I?
I guarantee it. So after that, they followed the Martha Washington model, and while this was moderately successful, it was nothing compared to 1890. Train, boat noise, harbor, people, crowd, city. I'm trying to do it like Ken.
Yeah, no, you've set the scene.
Ken Burns. Seth F. Lowe, working for his father's company, Daniel Lowe and Company, because people weren't good at naming things yet. He took a trip to Germany the year before and collected a bunch of incredibly unusual, even by now standards and, like, everyone's standards, German souvenir spoons. They were very figural, they were highly unusual, and they were just goofy and weird and pretty and very unique. And they kind of inspired Seth Lowe. So, on the request of his father, he designed a souvenir spoon for Salem, Massachusetts.
Seriously?
Seriously. The now incredibly famous Salem Witch Spoon.
No.
This is actually considered the kickoff to the witchcraft delusion. It is in part because of Daniel Lowe and Co.
So because Daniel made a sick spoon, Salem became the witchcraft tourist center of America?
Pretty much.
That's one, amazing. And two, amazing.
Well, people were already touring Salem because of, like, the legend of the witchcraft trials and because, like, nobody kind of knew better that it hadn't happened there. So people were showing up to peep the place, but Daniel Lowe is considered one of the first people to give them something to go home with about it. And something to popularize sort of the image we'd have of it pretty much forever.
Was it just, like, a witch hat?
It was. The spoon was a plain spoon. It's actually pretty unremarkable as far as souvenir spoons go, though. Although it is incredibly desirable. The handle is engraved with Salem in like, a weird sort of, like, I'm gonna call it a witchy scrawl, with a witch on a broomstick. Very simple, but very effective. It was so popular.
I can see why, because I want one.
They actually are not, they are not expensive, relatively speaking.
Oh, okay.
I saw a couple up for 138.
Ugh.
They're worth, like, their silver weight, basically, right now.
Damn.
Plus a little.
Yeah, that's still more than I feel comfortable spending on a spoon.
Yeah, I like that it's attainable.
That is pretty cool.
I like when, like, there's a grail item that is like, someday I could have this. So there were also three witch pins. I was hoping you could tell me about this. It also featured three witch pins that were on display at the Salem courthouse and claimed to be authentic.
Like the pins they used to test the witch marks?
Yep, that's the ones.
All right.
That scans.
So, quick background. It's the late 1600s. You are a witch. We will prove this by poking you all over your body with pins. If we find a spot on you that doesn't bleed or cause pain, that is where the devil is suckling from your flesh in the form of a familiar. Therefore, you're a witch.
Makes sense to me.
That tracks. Let's go.
So basically, if I don't have hemophilia, I'm a witch. Gotcha. So these did so well that in 1892, Seth Lowe went on to commission another piece, this time made by the Gorham Silver Company of Providence.
Hey,
now,
Robbie.
You've definitely heard of Gorham before.
I've definitely heard of Providence.
You haven't heard of Gorham? It's one of the most famous silver companies in America.
I've heard of Providence.
Okay, well, we have to do an episode on that now. So this one was... this is the one I think you would like the best, actually.
Yeah?
This one was incredibly decorative. The handle was figural. It was the handle of the broom and the rope going around it, which I think is a grim reference to the hangings.
No, I think that's just how you keep the bristles on the broom.
The rope is, like, it's kind of, like, hard to look at. It's, like, a lot going on. It has the place and the date, a cat, the broom, the rope, the three witch pins, a new moon, and the witch's figure on the finial of the spoon.
Fuck.
This basically introduced every now incredibly popular Halloween imagery. Very cool.
The cat, the witch, the moon, the broom, all of it.
It worked. They were like, oh, people liked tacky pictures of witches? I'm gonna give you tacky pictures of witches. And everyone went, thank you, sir.
May we have another.
It worked so well. And this is credited with kicking off the collectible spoon craze in America.
Amazing.
Couldn't have been a better backstory. By 1891, there were thousands of souvenir spoon patterns being designed, almost strictly as a response to the witch spoon. They were made for pretty much any city or town worth visiting, several cities and towns not worth visiting, famous people, famous events, and natural areas. I think, you know, Niagara Falls, famously, of course. Say famously like you didn't know it. I think one count said that there was, conservatively speaking, 2,500 patents, filed for spoon designs in 1 year.
Please tell me there were decorative spoon patent wars.
They probably were. I didn't find much evidence of it, though.
Oh, man. Can you imagine?
I would love to. And I will. So only a year after the phenomena started again in 1891, they started publishing collecting books about them.
Of course.
Which I have a footnote here that just says, just like Beanie Babies.
Oh my god.
In 1893, something happened that would rocket souvenir spoons to the next fucking level.
Can I guess?
Yes.
Chicago World's Fair!
You guessed it!
Yeah!
Exactly! Chicago World's Fair!
Thank you, Devil in the White City.
Also H.H. Holmes, but that's unrelated. Also called the Columbian Expedition.
Yeah.
Or the 400th anniversary of Columbus fucking up. Legend says that there were more commemorative spoons made for this event and the various aspects of it than any other event in fucking history going to now.
So what you're saying is that's a record we can break.
We could, yeah. Like, theoretically. But it was a lot of spoons.
How many?
No one knows.
Fuck, that's good. Okay, the record just got harder to break.
Yeah, well...
Because now we don't know what number we need to aim for.
Well, like, the thing is, so many have certainly gone lost and missing. It's easily the high thousands. Like,
I'm
we're talking...
Say high thousands.
I'm talking to 20 to 30 as a rough
thousand?
Estimate. Yeah.
I don't think I have that many ideas for antiques freak spoons.
It's possibly more spoons than that.
Fuck.
Because, as you may be aware, over 27 million people went to the fair.
I mean, you know.
And we have no way of knowing how many left with spoons. And obviously there's nobody out there cataloging which ones have been rediscovered.
I feel like there's a joke in there somewhere about the spoons metaphor. I have a feeling that nobody...
Oh, there sure is.
Like, listen, everybody left the Chicago World's Fair with spoons, but nobody left with spoons.
Nobody left with spoons.
Sorry.
And we're talking spoons for different, because obviously the World's Fair was a multi-layered event. Mm-hmm. I'm talking every aspect of the fair had its own fucking spoon.
Yes.
And in the thousands. And more than that, this introduced 27 million people to the concept of commemorative spoons. So all of a sudden people said, this is cool and I want them.
You go to the fucking Chicago World's Fair. You see all the different exhibitions for all the countries of the world, all the splendid architecture on display, all of the exotic dancers, all of the animals, all of the circus acts. You see Wild Bill's Buffalo West show shit. You see all of that.
My favorite part of the Wild West was Wild Bill's Buffalo Westworld shit. Also my favorite season of Westworld.
Listen, same, but also, you see all of that, but what you walk away is, oh my god, spoons.
I could be collecting spoons. Spoons with pictures on them?
An entire wall of electric lights. No, spoons though.
It's a really great undercurrent to the miracle that was the Chicago World's Fair.
First ever Ferris wheel. A design that physics at the time said was impossible. Nah, though. Spoon.
Well, just think, I can't buy a Ferris wheel now, can I, Ken?
I mean, you can steal a Ferris wheel.
Well, yeah, but you have to be really muscular and you gotta roll it really fast.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's already a wheel. It's gonna roll.
Anyway.
It wants to roll.
This is getting into, like, Wild Wild West territory in terms of, like physical comedy.
Episode upcoming. We will cover Wild Wild West.
Oh, we will.
Don't think we fucking won't.
I have also written here, introduce more than 27 people to souvenir spoons and also to H.H. Holmes. read Devil in the White City, it's a good time.
And then read the counter-argument book.
Well, you want to be fair, yeah.
That's like, actually, we have several of his victims that were alive after he was executed.
So, in addition to the World's Fair, which of course was a huge factor to their popularity, everything was kind of coming up spoon.
Everything's coming up spoons.
Industrialization was making things very quick, cheap, and easy to make in large numbers, and silver values had tanked. Horribly. 1893 was one of the worst years on record for silver.
Oh, is this the Argentine?
Oh, Ken just got a faraway look like he was there.
So in this one episode of Ripper Street...
Oh, here we go!
In this one episode of Ripper Street, they cover both their take on the Cleveland Street scandal, but also the B-plot is that Argentina is running out of silver, which is a problem for the British banks who have put most of their money into Argentina and its silver mines.
Holy shit, yeah, that was actually exactly it.
Also, until then, I had somehow not figured out why Argentina was called Argentina. Argent means silver.
No, I know. I was just like, how long did that take? You actually studied French.
Just in case anyone else is almost as stupid as me.
Oh, shut. Yeah, anyway, kids, this is a good... All of our listeners are fucking adults.
God, I hope so.
Well, yeah. Listen to your parents when they say Jesus is cool, unless they're saying some dumb shit to go with it. I think this is great evidence that, like, sometimes you can learn very valuable things from trash BBC shows. No offense.
Ripper Street didn't start trash. It just happened.
Ripper Street actually did a lot of, like, strong research until it didn't.
Until it didn't.
It's the wrong camera. It's the wrong camera!
One, the wrong camera. Two, fucking murdered the post-mortem reputation of Inspector Edmund Reed.
Yeah, like, rough.
Also...
By the way.
Also, way to really fucking... They added the actual real-life historical first female politician in England as a character so she can have an adulterous affair with their protagonist.
Natch.
And that's all she does all season.
Natch, of course.
Fuck the main character.
It's very cool.
Which, hey, by the way, real life never fucking happened.
No, I don't think it did.
But like, really, why would we even be talking about a woman if she weren't fucking someone?
That's true.
I have a lot of feelings about Ripper Street, but I'm going to put them back in the tiny little box in my heart where they belong.
Why don't we just do an ep on it?
Because I will yell for 8 hours.
I think
you know this.
I think everyone would really enjoy that.
It won't be an episode. It'll be a never-ending story series of just me shrieking incoherently about what Ripper Street did.
Stay tuned. I, you know what I smell? I smell a Patreon reward.
If we get to 300 a month, I'll yell about River Street.
Once a month, yeah. Like, once a month, I'll sit Ken down and I'll just, like, nod while he yells about River Street. And I'll interject about what I know about the props that is wrong.
Before we get back to Spoons, everyone go watch Year of the Rabbit if you can. It's a new BBC comedy that's not a direct parody of Ripper Street, but you can absolutely tell where they got their inspiration. It's basically a take on all cop genres and Victorian cop dramas in particular.
I hear it's a good time. I've watched it yet, but I will.
It's really fucking funny.
Okay, Spoon's time.
Yes.
So like I said, the silver collapse had happened, which made silver cheap. But also, one of the interesting things about silver is that no matter how many times it tanks, and this is something I've seen with, you know, myself, it doesn't lose its, like, aura of refinery and sophistication.
Silver looks good no matter what.
That's the thing. Silver never gets translated as tacky or tawdry even when it is dirt cheap. And that really contributed to this in particular. Because suddenly people were buying these really cheap little silver spoons that, at the time, looked really nice. And you could say, well, that's real silver. And again, regardless of stock prices, people go, oh, nice. And they would end up actually being an investment, as eventually silver would bounce back and they'd be worth a lot more. We'll get into a little later, the price of spoons now actually heavily depends on the price of silver.
Again, like Beanie Babies. Collectibles as investments.
Well, except this one actually has liquidity.
Oh, you.
If you want, like, a really quick and dumb breakdown by someone who doesn't understand economics on investments, I think our diamond episode's a great place to go. I do talk about investment properties for a little bit there.
Also our Beanie Babies episode.
Also our Beanie Babies episode.
If you want to learn where the real money is.
If you want to talk about how to make fucking good money. I have a giant Princess Diana bear in my car right now.
Why?
It was $2 at Savers.
God.
So... enthusiasm continued for souvenir spoons for about 30 years, buoyed constantly by the ongoing world fairs and expositions, and they were kind of the thing du jour, you know, like Beanie Babies, although they didn't last 30 years.
They're coming back.
They'll be back.
They'll be back.
And it died with World War I for reasons, well, I just can't imagine why that would have killed anyone's enthusiasm for anything.
Yeah, you know, mystery.
It's a mystery.
It's a mystery.
And it never really recovered after that.
Well, because we had the World War I, and then we had the Great Depression, and then we had World War II, and then we just kind of never really...
thought about spoons again.
It just never got better.
I read an interesting think piece where they were talking about how, like, souvenir spoons were this, like, advent of people who could travel suddenly. You know, this was still, even so far after the early 1800s, this was such a novelty. For people to be able to travel. And the concept of World War I really crushed people's interest in a global community for a long time.
Yeah.
Travel wasn't fun or exciting anymore when you had a death count to assign to these countries.
Yeah.
And that really, it did a number on a lot of industries. It feels stupid being like, especially the souvenir spoon industry. But that's what we're talking about here, and it's of particular note.
I also wonder... did they have, like, a little bump in the 50s at all? Because everyone, we had the highway system come in big way, and, like, cars and...
Yes, they did. That's also kind of a footnote. There's not a lot to say about it. But yeah, there was a brief bump. Those are mostly enameled and colorful, and they appeal to a specific sector of collectors who like Route 66 kind of thing. But you are right, yeah. You see souvenir spoons come back when people get excited about traveling again. Which, it might never happen again. Now that travel's sort of old hat. Because like you said... that was uniqueness from America's highway system. And I don't know that we're ever going to get anything like that again. I mean, until we get those tubes, I guess. You get, like, a tube spoon.
So, like, what do you need to gather in Minecraft to craft a silver spoon?
I don't think you can make one.
Well, that's a mistake.
Why are you trying to bait me into a Minecraft discussion?
Wait,
you play Minecraft.
Wait, okay. Okay, so it's a Fortnite clone, right? But all the loot boxes are different souvenir spoons.
You know I'd be dropping RL currency on that.
All right, so no one make that because D needs to still have money someday.
I would have so much RLC if, like, I could A, collect souvenir spoons, and B, not physically have them present in my home.
Meanwhile, in Second Life.
Oh my god! New cottage industry in Second Life! Someone get on that! Oh my god. I'm gonna make one for the porno cowboy one.
Why?
I've actually been to Second Life.
I can tell.
Oh my god, I'm excited about travel again. I thought that was just an interesting, like, anthropological thing about, you know, what makes something succeed and how you could destroy it. War, turns out.
Yeah, no, I would argue it's a big destroyer. I would argue destruction is its defining feature.
Yeah, and also, like you said, the Depression kind of... Everything was reduced down to survival. You don't see a lot of collectibles coming out of this period.
No.
At least none on purpose. I do want to talk about, like, flower sack dresses,
yes.
Which was an interesting marketing technique. But, again, it wasn't... It's uniqueness. About survival. This kind of puts the door on the history of spoons. They started as a crazy niche thing, and they have ended as a crazy niche thing.
So, I feel like you were about to ask me if I wanted to collect silver spoons.
Yeah, do you, though?
The answer is overwhelmingly yes.
It is.
Yes.
Amazing. I have good news. Right now, they're a decent price. While I was looking, I was inundated with ads for entire collections for $50.
Fuck.
Yeah. People still make them. You can still get them in, like, actually Providence, most of the Cape, things like that.
Salem.
Oh, we gotta go back to Salem and get some.
Hell yeah.
I think souvenir spoons are fun, awesome, great. They're one of those excellent, like, little intro collectibles. It's very easy to get excited about them because they represent so many interesting things in history. They've got a really low entry price point. Some of them are, like, at a lot of places you can find them for a dollar. The cap actually tends to be around $50. Even the rarest examples don't tend to go too much beyond $200, and everything past that is, like, a vanishing rarity. So it can be really fun. What's on them, you ask? Well, what wasn't? They had historical figures, animals, flowers, cities, towns, fairs, natural landmarks, holidays, countries, events, prisons, llamas, literary figures, hospitals, torture devices.
I would argue the only collectible more versatile than a spoon is a postcard.
It's true. It's very true. I mentioned the torture devices because I found one that was a little functioning Iron Maiden, and I've never wanted anything more in my life.
I want it!
Yeah.
It's so cute!
They can be engraved, cast, etched, enameled, carved, machine printed, all sorts of things. They are made out of pewter, silver plate, sterling silver, stainless steel, copper, brass.
Dee, I have a very important question for you.
Ask.
Are there collectible whaling spoons?
You have no idea. I think so, yes.
Okay.
There are collectible whale ship spoons. I do know this to be true.
Yes!
I got a source that you're gonna love.
Is it the Whaling Museum? Because I can walk there from my house.
No, it's spoonplanet.com.
Amazing!
He has an incredible visual list of some of the most interesting spoons in his collection. It also serves as just a primer as to the breadth of things that are covered by these spoons. It's really fun. It is actually has long been one of my favorite places to go because he has several pages on identifying unusual Victorian spoons and their functions.
Yes!
Because that is a known problem with people who run into Victorian serving spoons is that you look at it and you go, okay, wait, all right, what the fuck with this one?
Why would anyone make this?
Doesn't fit any known goddamn purpose. And the man at Spoon Planet, he has an answer for you, probably.
Oh, thank God.
These are one of those things where you might need to, like, pick... You might need to pick a category.
Spoons.
Okay, never mind. I guess you're just all in. Okay, sometimes only the handle is decorated. We talk about what this is a witch spoon. Sometimes the stem, bowl, and everything is decorated. Now, again, most spoons aren't worth that much. I don't consider this a detriment. I consider this more fun. But, you know, you need to know it if you're going to get into collecting it. Even some spoons from, like, we're gonna call them rare here, from, like, unusual places, places that are now gone, very rare events, you know, like a local festival that only happened once. High schools come up a lot, like a souvenir spoon of a specific high school that was only functioning for about 20 years.
A Brigadoon spoon, a Midsummer spoon.
Yeah, my favorite. These are rare, yes. They don't actually tend to sell well.
Because no one knows what the fuck
they knows what the fuck they represent, exactly. Nobody cares about that one high school in Iowa 10,000 years ago. Like, it's not... Like,
using a Mormon calendar?
Yeah. What? How old do you think the world is? But you know what I mean? It's like, the demand isn't high because nobody knows what it's representing. The really expensive spoons, the really collectible, like the creme de la creme, all operate in this really unusual place where they both have to be a well-known and popular subject matter and not produced in large numbers. As you can tell, this doesn't happen very often. Those two things cancel each other out, which is exactly why these are the rare examples. Because most popular tourist places, there are a lot of those spoons. If you pick up a Statue of Liberty spoon, I guarantee you there are millions. Another thing is that the more laden with images the spoon is, the less likely it is to be worth some, like, a big price tag.
Really?
This is because, now this depends on if it's machined or handmade. A handmade spoon, like the Gorham witch spoon, is actually still worth quite a bit because they're handmade. But later, the ones that are very, very decorative tend to be machine pressed. And as such, aren't worth quite as much.
I had no idea anyone was hand making spoons.
Oh yeah, Gorham was well known for their insistence on handcrafting.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I need all of them. I need these spoons, Dee.
I want to find you one.
Dee, I need more spoons. Do you get it? Because it's a metaphor.
Oh, it's a metaphor. I get it. Another big one are Roger Brothers spoons that are marked 1847. That indicates the opening of the company, not the age of the spoon in question. These were grossly mass-produced, tend to be worth about a dollar.
No.
I see that, well, I used to see that a lot.
Just people coming into the shop being like, this spoon was made in 1847, and then you have to crush all of their dreams, and then they won't leave.
I hate doing that. I always, almost always try to find something else fascinating to say about it. Like, you know,
this is certainly a spoon!
You know, there's corn on this. Like, yeah, I know, it's from Kansas. Rough price guides, a silver plate spoon tends to cap out at about $15, is the most expensive. A sterling silver spoon, they hover around 50. Again, they go up depending on subject matter.
Or silver price.
50 kind of like a base price, assuming silver is at its perfect median, which has literally never happened. A lot of the ones that are expensive are based on fucking whim. Sometimes people just get like a bug in the back of their head to collect a certain thing, event. You see this a lot with world fairs. They tend to go through these weird pulses of interest.
Whenever someone releases a new H.H. Holmes book.
Is that it? I've never actually seen the governing...
I mean, that's what I base most of my purchases on, but...
That's fair.
Your mileage may vary.
I have no idea what governs when people remember the World's Fair. I think maybe, like, when Disney World releases something new and everyone remembers when that was cool.
Oh my god. There are absolutely Disney World spoons, aren't there?
Yeah. Yeah, well, Walt Disney himself was very active in the World Fair scene.
Oh, I thought you said he was gonna be active in the spoon scene.
I don't know about that. But no, it's a Small World debuted at the World Fair.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I mean, Walt Disney's a horrible person and the company's a nightmare, but, like, sometimes we can close our eyes and remember back to when things were good, right?
Nope.
Okay. So, hand silversmith ornate spoons, popular topics that were made in limited quantities, sterling in general, and spoons older than 1800 are all considered the creme de la creme. Remember, there were no American spoons made before 1889. If you see one claiming to be, it's fake.
If you see one labeled 1847, we have bad news for you.
European spoons from before 1889 are also really, really unusual, and while I wouldn't say it's fake because there are a lot of German examples, relatively speaking, I would be suspicious. Be wary of engraved dates. You may have figured hand engraving is very easy to fake, and people get better prices for things that are engraved with a date because to someone unaware... It looks old.
For more on how to fake engraving, check out our Jefferson Wine episode.
Yeah. Oh, they did an unusually good job. Fake engraving glass is actually much harder, but silver, yeah, you might have to, like, brush up on your engraving techniques.
Or just visit the printmaking lab at your local art school.
That too, they can help you. I'm not kidding, that would actually be very good. Thank you. Most of the time, the forgeries tend to be dated with the wrong date. Like, they tend to be dated older than is likely. I don't want to say possible. Nothing's impossible, but they tend to be dated older than is likely. So, you know, if it's the price is too good to be true and the date is too good to be true, approach with extreme caution. You know, you might want to get some experts involved at this point. That's about it.
Sick.
Yeah. So spoons are fun.
I love spoons.
I love spoons too.
Let's go to Salem and take all their spoons. You know, there was... Okay, listen. Do you remember at the Salem Witch Museum with the waxwork display... In their gift shop, they had a glass case of collectible spoons.
They did, and I'm kicking myself that I didn't pay closer attention, but I do also live less than an hour away, so...
Let's go.
Let's go. So, sources for today's episode include... PBS.org, History Detectives, The History of Souvenir Spoons. ecommercebytes.com article, The Price of Souvenir Spoons. As mentioned before, spoonplanet.com, just the whole dang old website is a delight. It's fun, you'll have a good time, and there's lots of good information. And spoonquest.com, largely a sales page, but has a lot of tidbits of fun information.
Also a Dune clone.
Yeah. Spoonquest is what I call going to sleep. Get it? It's a metaphor. I go to sleep, I wake up with more spoons. It was so funny that you didn't even laugh at all.
I was laughing on the inside. If you would like to yell about Ripper Street and or spoons.
We accept either.
You can email us directly, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com, or you can check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks. And while you're there, you can join our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends.
It's a good time. A lot of great people with a lot of cool information.
And excellent pictures of both antiques and just fun graphics.
And probably the spoons we discussed here, because thanks to Spoon Planet, I've got a bunch.
Yes. If you would like to purchase some vintage goods or some merch with the podcast logo on it, you can check out our Etsy at etsy.com/antiquesfreaks.
I have more books.
More books.
More books. I'm going to cry.
If you would like to listen to deleted scenes, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. And while you're there, you can join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month.
I got a new batch coming in. It's going to be exciting.
Yes. Postcards. Marginally more versatile than spoons.
Easier to send in the mail.
Very much so. Thank you to our current patrons for keeping the podcast lights on, paying our hosting fees, and getting us ever closer to buying a second microphone and producing bonus episodes, which may or may not include more shrieking about Ripper Street.
I really want it to, so please consider becoming a patron.
And thank you for listening.
Especially you.
Goodbye.
Bye.